Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Sentimental Garbage, a podcast where we discuss the culture that we love that society tries to make us feel ashamed of. My name is Karen O'Donoghue and I'm a fashion don't. Today I'm joined by co-host of the 6 o'clock show and the living spirit of Joan Rivers, Muireann O'Connell.
Yeah, that's Hello. Me and Joan. Wow.
Oh, Muireann, what are you wearing?
Terrible. She looked like she was run over by a garbage bus. That's really bad, John. I'm so sorry. Please don't turn in the old grave. We love you. We love you. When fashion police used to be fun. Joan Rivers.
A garbage bus.
Garbage bus. I don't, what are they called?
I was watching so much Joan Rivers in preparation for this.
Oh my God.
In case no one can tell by the episode title. Today we're talking about something very new, very different for Sentimental Garbage. I'm super excited. We're talking about red carpets, which Muireann, you brought to me. And I want to hear the journey.
So for a year in my head, I had, if Caroline O'Donoghue ever asked me to go on Sentimental Garbage, I'm going to pitch her on red carpets. And I had this whole thing of like how I will pitch her, how I will pitch Caroline, how I pitch you. It was like a paragraph, really well thought out. And then when you got in contact with me, it was the day that like the championship, the All-Ireland Championship had started in Ireland. Wimbledon final was on. The Euros final was on. And we'd had a few drinks. So I just ended up in caps shouting down an Instagram DM to Caroline, red carpets. That was it. There was no thought. Caroline was like, okay, maybe you should elaborate on this. I was like, no, red carpet, red carpet. I woke up the next day going, yeah. I didn't really do myself any justice there, did I?
No, it was incredible because I have been, you know, launching this whole new season, deciding I was going to do something a little bit different this season, expanding it out from books and TV shows and do all kinds of culture. And when I made that decision in my head, I was like, people are going to be talking about songs, maybe music videos, maybe films, maybe like individual characters. But then for you to come immediately, and you were one of the first people I asked, with just the concept of the red carpet, it really unlocked what I actually did want to be this season to be about. You know, all these things that like get brushed under the kind of the rug of sort of general female consensus, but actually is a whole structured reality. It's a game, it's a sport. Like, and I want to talk about that element of it first, because that's how you pitched it to me. You said it's a sport like any other. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought you were right.
The one thing, like, I do think of it as a massive sporting event, something that the whole world gets involved in. They're like the Euros, the Olympics, the All-Ireland final. Everyone knows when they're on. Everyone knows that that there's going to be a lot of talk about it the next day in the media and in the papers. Mm-hmm. Everyone has skin in the game, if purely just for crack. There are losers, there are winners. Like a sporting event, crowds of people get together to watch, not just people who can go physically to the event, but there are viewing parties now. People go over to each other's houses. They've got themes for the Oscars, for the BAFTAs, for the SAGs, for the IFTAs. Let's throw in the Irish one there as well. It's become such a huge thing, and there are chants, you know? You're going for your favourites. You're going for the underdogs. You're wondering about what's going to surprise you. And like a bad tackle in a game, you know, that results in a red card, a bad outfit could have you at home grimacing like you stubbed your toe and then you walked into a door. It's a sporting event.
So right.
Like, it's not, it's been dismissed for so long for girls and gays and a stupid thing. But another thing about this, and I know this isn't all men, and I know it's not men that just throw this away under, you know, dismiss it like that. But if you just look at the stats, right, the world sporting industry is about, it's worth about 526 billion. That's huge. So we're talking about all levels of it. It's probably a little bit more about that. But the world fashion industry is worth 695 billion. And for such a huge industry to be dismissed all the time as something frivolous, when it is something that creates jobs, it can make or break economies and companies and people, for it not to be held in as high regard as sport, which has whole sections dedicated to it in papers every single day. Bonkers and madness.
It's such an amazing point, and it really opened up my eyes, because yeah, that day when you were texting me, I was watching the Euros with my boyfriend or whatever, and I'd been hearing him talk all year about like these various players who are kind of they're debuting or they're reaching the peak of their game. And then I was watching Wimbledon, and that amazing British player Emily Raducanu was just kind of coming out. This was like her big debut. But it's the exact same when you're watching an individual star's journey mm-hmm. on a red carpet season. Like, they use these red carpets to make their debuts. Like, I always think of like when Saoirse Ronan was doing the award season for Brooklyn. It was at a moment where it was like, I am a grown up now. You have watched me like in the little kid dresses for Atonement and all that. This is the debut. It was like her cotillion. It was like, here are my princess dresses. Here are my plunging necklines. Here's my sequins. Here's my panda eyes. And it was like, okay, we are now beckoning in the Saoirse era. And it's just like an athlete that way, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're like, oh yeah, they're coming in. They've had some promising outings at like festival,
Gone from the under 20s. They've been called up to the senior team. No more junior Bs for you. I'm using a lot of GAA terms for English listeners. I'm very sorry, UK listeners. Sorry about that. But it is, it's your arrival onto a stage. And we can all see in the world of celebrity how many people don't make that transition that Saoirse Ronan has had. But more and more people are making it, and you get to champion them, and you're behind them, and you're like, oh, look at how they've changed into this fantastic player that's reached their potential. Because like so many other people in the world of sport, you would have people that don't reach the potential that we thought that they were going to reach.
Yes.
I don't want to name names because some are still playing and you're like, oh no, that's not fair. They're still there. But you know, there were such huge hopes for them. And like that, you know, you can see it in the world of celebrity with, dare we say, a poor Lindsay Lohan. You know, we thought that she was going to be a Saoirse Ronan, but it falls down. And the red carpet, as you have just said, is how we see that. But it's also, it's a stage, it's a pitch. That we're going, what are we going to see happen on this pitch today? We don't know the drama. We don't know the incidents. We don't know the off the ball play that's going to be happening.
Yes.
It's all there. It's all there.
I'm already I'm pumped. I feel like I'm at like a sporting event right now. I'm just like ready.
But there's so much, like it's tied up with the fact that like, okay, so red carpets kind of debuted in 1922. I did way too much research for this. I'm lost.
As did I. I read some like B2B books about the fashion industry that are for people in the fashion industry for this. I can't wait to drop some anecdotes. But yes, give me the history.
Well, there's not. Well, I ended up going
back to, I saw the notes, Marin. You're back in biblical times with this.
Name the most hetero and kind of misogynistic or anti-woman book in the world. The Bible.
The Bible.
Full of fashion. It's full of fashion. Literally, right, they're talking about carpets all the time and that. They can't shut up about fashion in the Bible. I'm like, all right, lads, calm down. We all know Jesus had a seamless one-thing garment. They couldn't stop going on about his seam-free garment. He had the original seam-free pants on so that you couldn't see the line. That's all over the Bible.
Is that actually in there?
That's in the Bible because everyone else, they had seams in their clothes, but Jesus was special. He didn't have a seam in
it. He had a seam-free garment. He had no VPL.
Mm-hmm. That's our BG Jesus. So it's tied up in absolutely everything. But I suppose there have been questions about, are red carpets inherently anti-feminist? Because, mm-hmm. We're taking these incredibly successful women and making them parade down a runway.
And making them dolls, like fashion dolls, right?
Yeah, or like they're at a pageant, do you know?
Yeah.
That we're kind of, oh, we're going to judge you and who's got the best dress. But and of course, up until, and I would say very recently, maybe at the very start of red carpets, it was a definite fashion moment for men. But then for about 50 years, they were just forgot. Because what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's a lad in a suit.
Another black suit. Yeah. Look at his watch. Or like every now and then when you're watching old episodes of Fashion Police, they'll be like, oh, Antonio Banderas. I love the way he's got white piping on his trouser line. And you're like, who gives a fuck? When like your one Renee Zellweger's out there with the metallic silver peplum. Like, I don't give a fuck if Antonio Banderas has some white piping,
Like Renee can't breathe for 4 hours because of what she's wearing. This is high endurance. Sports here, lads. This isn't for Antonio with the same. Because what are you going to say? You've got no skin in the game until recently. An awful lot has changed in the last 4 years when it comes to men. But And it could actually be said that red carpets were sexist against men for a while because we didn't care.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about them. We didn't do anything. But I don't think, like, do you think that there is a feminist issue or an anti-feminist issue at play here?
Well, I thought about this a lot because, yes, there is a very dystopian Handmaid's Tale angle where you could, like, okay, we're going to get these women and let's, and like, for, you know, brevity, we're going to talk about actors, really, because those are, and to a smaller extent, musicians, because those are the people that we generally watch on the red carpets.
Yeah.
And people who, like, you know, studied method and, like, you know, like Ruth Negga went to Trinity and then RADA and all that, like people who've gone through intense academic experiences to learn their craft, and we're going to treat them like dolls and just sort of parade them around and things and make, and that whole thing about Ask Her More and all that. But on the other hand, you risk a lot on the red carpet, but you gain a lot on the red carpet, and you gain a lot in a way that, like, I don't think men can gain it. I think a lot about Jennifer Lawrence in the red Calvin Klein dress when she was nominated for Best Actor for Winter's Bone. Now, nobody fucking saw Winter's Bone. Like, people who love Jennifer Lawrence now seek out Winter's Bone. But then it was like an indie movie that was kind of grim.
Take out the kind of, it was just grim. That was just like, I'm not watching this on a Friday night. Thanks very much, lads.
Yeah, no. Yeah, exactly. I remember, yeah, no. But I remember the first time I ever, she entered my consciousness was when she was in that gorgeous red halter Calvin Klein. She had this beachy blonde hair and she just looked like a babe. And she looked like, just was such a, I just, you just remembered the silhouette so well. You remembered how she looked. And so that made me, whenever, when I saw The Hunger Games, I was like, oh, of course. And like, that imprinted in my head, like a baby duckling seeing its mother, in a way that, I'm sure there was lots of upcoming nominated actors that night who are men who I never thought of and have never thought of since. I still don't know what so many male actors who I've seen look like. Tom Hardy, I don't know what Tom Hardy looks like. I have face blindness with that man because it's just another man in the sea of men. So it's like, you, and also, okay, another one.
There are women out there now that will be running up with pictures of Tom Hardy to you going, put him in your spank bank, Caroline, you're missing out. So I'm not a Tom Hardy girl myself, but I get what you're,
but like, there are Tom Hardy. I do understand that. Another one I think of is, I'm sorry, I don't really see Oscar-y movies. I don't really watch depressing movies. I didn't go to see 12 Years a Slave. But what I did see was Lupita Nyong'o in that powder blue dress, looking like a princess. And that's when I think about Lupita Nyong'o, I think about her in that dress.
Lupita Nyong'o, when she emerged onto the scene and that dress,
yeah.
If you're, I don't know if there's a companion to this, you can just Google these if you're walking around listening to us in your ear holes. She changed everything that year because she was reintroducing colour in a way that hadn't been used in a time like that, just vibrant and hopeful. And it also differentiated herself from her character, much like Jennifer Lawrence. It was a miserable,
yes.
Winter's Bone was so miserable. She comes out in this red dress and you're like, oh, you're good crack. Look at your hair looks like you could go dancing. Like in Studio 54, it completely takes her away from the character that she was, so that we could see her through different eyes and going, oh, she's multifaceted. She's a person. Same with Lupita Nyong'o. That whole 12 Years a Slave award season, her dresses were like, this is who I am. I represented this strong, this amazing character. But that movie, I mean, honestly, I wanted to rip my eyes out. It's very, 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 very difficult. And then you see her and you're like, oh my God, this woman has so many things going on. I am not just categorizing her in this way as the woman who is going to do very hard to watch movies. She's ready for so much
more. You're so right. She's playful. She's sophisticated. She's young. She's fashionable. You know, you're totally right.
Yeah. And it was because I think for someone like Lupita as well, because of her background, so much was put on her. Can you imagine that sort of pressure? Where she's not just going on, like, you know, being from Mexico, but a whole continent. People were like, she's the African actress. When you're like, lads, there's over 50 countries in Africa. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot going on there. Stop putting everything on one person. But she did. She took it. And she was just fantastic. Every single thing. For that, every single time she's on the carpet, you're like, I cannot wait.
You're waiting for Lupita.
She's one of my favorite players.
Yes. Yeah. And the thing about players that I find so fascinating is that And the more you, I don't know a lot about, I'm just someone who likes clothes, but doesn't know fuck all about designers. But the more you look into it, the more fascinating it gets. Because like a football team, the biggest players are owned by the biggest teams. Mm-hmm. So Chanel owns Margot Robbie, yeah. essentially. Like she got...
they do. She plays for Chanel. Yeah.
She's
yeah.
like, it's the same as like... Beckham at Manchester United, like it's the same. It's she's on their team. Shame it, she's their star player,
like Michelle Williams with Louis Vuitton. That's who she plays for. Yeah, you're 100% right.
Yeah,
yeah.
And they have these big sponsorship deals. But Margot Robbie's stylist, who styled her for her whole I, Tonya run, even though she didn't win in the Best Actress category, her stylist came out and said, "Yeah, the day after the Oscars, I got a call from Chanel with a, for a huge sponsorship deal, and that was her winning." Like that was, we knew she was, she's too young, she's too green for that award, but we knew we wanted a huge sponsorship deal at the end of this, and they got one.
See how it all tied up, because I, Tonya is a movie that she was the producer of. It was a passion project. Mm-hmm. She made no, like very little money from it. It started to make money afterwards because people mm-hmm. were like, who is this woman? Because she had been made, we'd seen her on the red carpet. That is yeah. what's at play with women all of the time. Because when it comes to how much money people are making, women are always going to be way, 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 way behind the men. Like if you look at, so this is for 2019 or 2020. So the top female earners took home 315 million before fees and taxes. Mm. And then the top men, the top 10 male actors, they're 600 million. So they use the wow. red carpet as a way to make money so that they can fund passion projects and do more indie movies. Anne Hathaway does it. She got a big sponsorship deal after 2011, after The Devil Wears Prada with Tiffany. You know, she was paid three wow. quarters of a million to wear their jewels on the red carpet to the Oscars. And then
yeah.
you're not making the money that men are making, but you subsidize it. Now, a lot of money to them and a lot of money to us. You know, give me a fiver, I'll throw on a necklace. Grant, no hassle. For them, it's three quarters of a million. Like we're talking about different worlds here now, people. But she gets to do more indie movies because they see her on the red carpet and they're like, she's viable, she's getting in. All the magazines, all the pictures, everyone's talking about her. Give her money. And she's supplementing her income that way so that she can then, like Margot Robbie, she can go off and be more of a producer, put more money into her production yeah. company and therefore look for the movies that she wants, just like Reese Witherspoon. She's done that for years. Yeah.
And it's incredible. It's an amazing infinity loop then, because the more money they have to put into projects, the more diverse characters they get to play and dramatic roles they get to play, the more we see them in these raw, stripped down roles. Then we see them on the red carpet promoting that role, looking like a million bucks. And we're back in that fantasy of like, oh, well, she plays a drug addict in this, but she looks like this over here. And it's very exciting to us when we have that dichotomy that gets to exist in our head. It's why everyone loves Charlize Theron.
See, Charlize Theron is such an interesting case because mm-hmm. we know her now as Charlize Theron. She's fantastic. She can do absolutely anything. And then here yeah, in Ireland,
she's a Greek
we've got
god.
We've got a special connection with her because she went out for Stuart Townsend for so long that we think that she's ours.
I do think that she's ours, yeah.
She went to the protest at the Hill of Tara when they wanted to build a motorway. I mean,
okay.
She had her placard out.
So, okay, a brief aside about the Irish and how we feel about celebrities.
Yes.
So people always say to me, my English friends are like, you seem to adopt celebrities very quickly, considering the fact that anybody who claims they're Irish or they have Irish ancestry, you despise. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yes, that is true. That is a dichotomy. We hate people who claim to have an Irish grandmother. We love any, we love Matt Damon when he comes to say in, where was he again?
He was in Dorky.
He was in Dorky. The thing is, we hate people who claim ancestry, but we love people who spend even one day here.
Yeah, it's one day. And especially if they can be someone like Rachel McAdams, who comes here all the time, but no one ever knows, because everyone, we are so self-congratulatory in Ireland about how, oh, sure, they're just another person. We're grand. It started to change yeah. recently. People have started to get selfies. But for years it was like, is that who I think it is? It is, yeah. How are you? Walking out. Oh, we think we're so. We're like, we're not impressed by celebrity.
I know. And we totally negate our own chillness by talking about how chill we are.
Yeah. Oh.
It's about like that girl who says that she's fine with it being friends with benefits, but she keeps saying it.
Yeah, that's it. If you keep saying that enough, they're definitely going to think that you're a girlfriend and boyfriend. That's what's going to happen. Yeah. We think they're going to move here. You know, it's like, guys, we gave you so many tax exemptions. Come back, come back.
So Charlize Theron, back to Charlize Theron.
Charlize Theron was really coming onto the scene 1999 and 2000. And in the year 2000, she wore this tangerine gown by Vera Wang to her very first Oscars. She's rarely worn a dress that you don't go, that is unbelievable. She was like something right out of the 1940s. It was a halter neck. It was sheer. Nips were on show. Go Charlize, do your thing. It was ruched at the bottom, backless. It's stunning. Just Google it. 2000 Charlize Theron Oscars dress. But in 2004, she spoke about how that dress almost ruined her career completely before it had started. So, and it was completely unintended, obviously. And she says, I can't tell you how many times I've auditioned for a role only to have my agent come back and say, listen, Charlize, they saw you in the orange dress and they don't think you can do it.
Wow.
So her looking like so much of a bombshell, a 1940s bombshell, almost killed her career. This is when, yeah, this was at the start when she was just starting, herself and Cameron Diaz. Mm. This is the roles that they were. They were blonde, they were dumb, that was it. And that's why she was so passionate about Monster in 2004. So not only did she love the story, she produced it, she was incredibly involved. But she went on to say, I finally thought that this was the movie that would let people, and we're talking about the men in power, see her in a different way. That she could do so much more. So it's why she championed it. And she fought for that movie for so long. Because she was like, I'm getting one movie role every year. And it's just playing the dumb blonde who's that character that spurs the male action forward. And she was like, I'm not doing this anymore. And that was all because of an Oscars dress. So it makes or breaks careers. And she decided that she had to do something about it to turn that all around. And now she wears whatever the hell she wants because she's Charlize Theron.
When you were... So what I find as well fascinating about the red carpet concept is that because these images travel so far and so wide, they become these really defining concepts for how women understand beauty. And I'm curious to know, when you were growing up, what was the red carpet image that was like seared in your brain? It's like, that's how a lovely lady looks, you know?
There are a few. It would definitely be when I was young, when I saw Sharon Stone, was it in 1998? When she was on the Oscars red carpet wearing a shirt.
With the white shirt and the purple satin skirt.
Yes. And it just reminded me of, you know, my school uniform. Because in Ireland we wear, well, in Limerick, sorry, where I'm from, not where Caroline's from, because their skirts are up there, hoops in Cork. I swear to God, if you can't see a bit of pubic hair,
the
skirt isn't short enough. That Cork is, woo!
Yeah, we're a legs county.
We are a legs county. We're called the nuns in Limerick because if our skirt isn't on, if it isn't touching the ground, it's not good enough. Like, we got to the stage where I was growing and Mom was like, I'm not buying you any more skirts. So I used to have to leave the zip open at the side so that it could trail along the ground because it kept on going up my legs. So when I saw her, I was like, she's wearing my school uniform. Like, she's wearing a shirt.
Long purple skirt and a white shirt.
I had a blue shirt and a navy skirt. I was like, look how she made that fantastic. That's amazing.
Oh,
so, you know.
That is so powerful. It's sort of that equivalent as well of when you're really young and like wrapping a towel dress around you and sort of pretending like it's a red carpet moment because you're like, ooh, my little strapless moment.
I still to this day, I try to do the tie in the middle, you know, those 1940s dresses that go with the tie in the middle. It's like a rose in the middle and then it all comes out like in the Philadelphia story. When I see people on Instagram doing that, when they're doing their makeup routines and the towel just stays, I'm like, come on now.
How
are the boobs not out all the time? But yeah, it is that childhood towel moment. Sharon Stone was definitely one of that for me. But also that year, it was 1998 as well. And this is not a big fashion moment for, I always say it and everyone's like, what? So Mini Driver in 1998, Good Will Hunting. So she had just come off doing Circle of Friends. Again, this is tied to Ireland. So Maeve Binchy, one of the greatest novelists of all time.
One of my favourite books of all time, I think, Circle of Friends. And there's we have a great episode on that book. So everyone, if you're interested, go back and listen.
Unbelievable. It's the sort of thing, it really brings up, I'm loath to say it, but you know, Colm Tobin has kind of been trying to write A Circle of Friends his entire life. He's an amazing writer, but I'm just saying Maeve Binchy was doing it for years and she kind of never got the plaudits, I don't think, personally.
I agree.
You know, she could just, oh God, her whole back catalogue. Anyway, so they were filming, they'd filmed for Circle of Friends in Ireland. So it was like Colin Firth was here doing it just after he did Darcy. He had that really horrible mustache, and Saffron Burrows and Alan Cummings, and Minnie Driver did this amazing Irish accent as Benny. And you know, the whole thing with Benny is that, you know, she's this frumpy girl who can't get it right and she's never going to find love. And next thing, Chris O'Donnell comes along and she can't believe that he's going to like her. So I just remember when we were teenagers, we just took Benny to our hearts. We just loved her so much. And Minnie Driver was so good that I've loved her ever since. Then Gross Point Blank came out in 1997, still my favourite movie of all time. And Good Will Hunting. And there was this whole thing about herself and Matt Damon. They found love on the set. Everyone was obsessed. This is real celebrity time. Everyone was obsessed with their relationship. And she walked the red carpet in this red Halston gown. And she had a fur stole, hopefully fake fur, I don't know. And it is the most beautiful thing. And then she just had her black curls. They were luxuriant. They were vibrant. She looked so beautiful, so confident.
Oh, I'm looking at it now. Oh, she's fabulous. Oh, such a moment.
All-time favorite dress, because she walked that red carpet. She was like, I have arrived. And of course, she'd been through a lot, because herself and John Cusack had been together during Gross Point Blank, and then they had broken up. And then she was going out with Matt Damon. This was in March. They were still going out, walking the red carpet. She walked it by herself. And then a few weeks later on Oprah, he publicly breaks up with her. She didn't know that they were broken up with. So that moment in time has always...
So this was after that breakup moment?
Just after. I always remember that red dress, because it just happened a couple of weeks later. He broke up with her publicly. And that moment where she looked so good and it was her time to arrive. Like, everyone was like, Minnie Driver is the next big thing. She's going to get all the next big roles. And this breakup kind of changed her career. Like, it really did. It changed things that she got.
It put the stink on her. It put the... Because it's so... That business is so much about aura and so much about being wanted and being lusted after, that the idea of a man publicly rejecting you and you don't even know puts this sort of thin film of stink on you that then endears you to women but horrifies you to the male gatekeepers.
And Matt Damon
that control everything.
Was one of the Miramax golden boys, one of the Harvey Weinstein golden boys. And she was on the outs. That was it. And as a result, that dress, which is just fantastic in and of itself, but it's always stayed with me as being like, this was her moment and it got taken away from her. But also, it just looks fantastic. Everyone Google the dress.
Oh, I'm looking at it now. And it's, do you want, I think there are, for me, two distinctive genres of red carpet dress. There's the red carpet dress that pushes the envelope, like something that Rihanna might wear or Janelle Monáe might wear, where it's like, taking a traditional silhouette and like blowing it up and adding a kind of a level of costumery and art, and it's like a living painting. And those are the things that become these like images that just stay in our heads, and you want them as posters on your wall. There's so many Rihanna moments I can think of, like her, all the Met Galas, and they exist in one category. But then there is the other category, and Minnie Driver in this red dress is one of them. Michelle Williams in the yellow Vera Wang is another.
The Brokeback Mountain year.
Yes, the Brokeback Mountain year. Red lip, side bun. The picture I went to when my sister was getting married and I was her bridesmaid, I went to the hair and makeup girl with the 8x10 of that, of Michelle Williams' face that I had printed out in a web cafe. But the second category that Minnie Driver and Michelle Williams represent is the kind of dress that ordinary women look at and be like, oh, maybe I could wear that.
Yes.
It's the kind of thing that filters down into dress shops. It filters down into Deb's dresses and prom dresses and all that kind
of
stuff.
It's accessible.
And then they become part of the market.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's a huge industry. There's loads of documentaries out there if you want to look at it. And I know it's not great and there's fast fashion and it's awful. But the next day in LA, they will pick 10 dresses. There's this one place and they'll pick 10 dresses and they will start mass producing straight away.
As soon
as the red carpet is over, they go and they spend 2 hours going, these are the 10 that everyone's going to want. Let's start right away now. and they start copying the designs. So it filters down to, you're dead right, it filters down to everything. But then there are the avant-garde that also yeah. push the envelope. Like when you mentioned Janelle Monáe, was it last year when she wore, it was like the Joan of Arc suit of armor yeah. dress where it yeah. had a hood and it went all the way and it was a classic silhouette, but it was armory. And yeah. I was like, that is, it was a work. It was an artwork.
It's so good. It's so fantastic because these two sort of categories, and maybe there are more categories, I don't know, but like they bolster each other because the Janelle Monáe moments, the Rihanna moments, they put the case forward that fashion is living art.
Mm-hmm.
And so it justifies us talking about these garments. and then these other kind of more trad gowns come in and you're like, but we want to look pretty and just buy this from warehouse, you know, when it finally filters down. I mean, it's that iconic Meryl Streep moment of Devil Wears Prada with the blue jumper,
yes.
right? That every woman who's even partially interested in clothes remembers that, like, I think it was Vera Wang, wasn't it? That had not blue, but cerulean, and then it filtered down and then...
Until it ended up in your JCPenney or whatever, and she goes through the whole yeah. layers.
Well, you fished it out of some bargain bin.
That's it. There, but like, isn't it just fun when you're playing, like when you're playing sort of bingo? I stay up for the last 3 or 4 years. When I joined Instagram, I was like, I just love red carpets. I was like, I'm going to do the red carpet. Every red carpet that I can think of, I stay up. If it's in America, I stay up. I watch it live. I do the thing. It's a bit bitchy, but it's not bitchy. It's kind of celebrating everything, but it's fun. So in 2019, Emily Blunt, when she was up at the SAG Awards for Best Actress in A Quiet Place, what a flopping movie, and A Quiet Place 2. It was my first cinema experience after the pandemic. Sorry, that we were allowed to go during the pandemic there recently. I know it's still on. And bloody amazing. But she arrives at the SAG Awards in something that, a dress that just looked like a clitoris. And I was just like, you know, people are like, why do you stay up? You know, you got to work the next day. I'm like, this is why. Because Emily Blunt has walked on a red carpet looking like a fucking clitoris. And it's amazing. I love it so much.
Emily Blunt. Scroll down. SAG
scroll
Awards.
Down. Scroll down there. I put it in the doc. It's or Google.
Oh, is it in the doc? Okay, let's look at the clitoris dress. I will make a ruling on whether or not it is indeed a clitoris. And by the way, everyone, I will have all these images on my Instagram. I'm at Zarinline. And you're at Myrne O'Connell, so I'm sure you'll have some images as well. Where is this clitoris? Wow.
Right?
That is a labia minora.
Woo! It's like she's being birthed. Her head is coming out of herself.
It's like she's giving birth to herself.
It is like she's giving birth to herself. Her moment. She has arrived. I just remember... people being like, why do you stay up? I'm like, because this, it's fun. Who knew that Emily Blunt would give birth to herself on a fucking red carpet? Like, come on, lads. This is just great crack.
It's just great crack. It really is.
It's great crack. And it's the sort of thing, if you go back even further, because it's always been tied up in the political, right? Without a shadow of a doubt. So back in 1936, they were told women, you know, the studio bosses, they were like, you need to be more glamorous, sexier, more alluring, sultry on the red carpet. So Betty Davis went into the costume department, grabbed a dress from a film called The Housewife and wore that to accept her Oscar because she was like, fuck you, don't tell me what to wear. And she went pure dowdy. So it's all tied up in the political and people being able to make a statement about who they are or going against their bosses and going, I can't be arsed. For you, when you were like, when you were young, what was the moment that you were like, I like this red carpet stuff?
The first thing I remember is the Halle Berry sort of translucent, it's an Eli Saab gown. It's everyone will remember it. She accepted the award for Monster's Ball and it's sort of a translucent top with beading that very artfully covers everything and then this very full red skirt. And it's sort of, it's this incredible thing of like this, it's kind of risque while being incredibly elegant at the same time. And that was not a usual thing to see then. Like it felt like in a sea of like princess cut dresses.
Yes.
This sort of this sort of this creature emerging, and she just was so different and it was so gorgeous and it really stuck in my head. But this week I learned an incredible thing about that dress, which is, so I read this book, the title of which I forget, but it isn't very good, so I'm not recommending it. But it's basically about, it was written by a fashion agent who represents designers and tries to get things on the red carpet. So there are a few good anecdotes in it. And one of them was this Lebanese designer, Eli Saab, who really was a very small fry. And this is like when we're talking about these underdog moments that happen in fashion, just like they happen in sport. Eli Saab is definitely one of them. So Eli Saab pitched this beautiful red dress to Annabella Shora, who was up for a Best Supporting Nom at the Golden Globes for The Sopranos. And this was in the late 90s. And it was, you know, they had done the fittings, they had gone through the entire rigmarole of, you know, doing jewelries and accessories and all that. And then suddenly, a day before the awards, Annabella turned around and she said, "This is a winner's dress and I'm not going to win this year. And I'm going to feel like a tit, basically, if I'm wearing the winner's dress and I'm not the winner."
What?
And so she decided, I know, isn't that mad? And so she decided she wasn't going to wear it. Eli Saab was obviously devastated. This was supposed to be her big moment. And then 2 years later, Halle Berry wears it for accepting the Oscar for Monsters Ball. Because it is the winner's dress.
Are you kidding me?
No, it's a real story.
That is amazing.
Yeah. And then Eli Saab is like one of the huge, she still dominates the red carpet. She's still huge. She dresses everybody, you know.
It's so funny because of everything that happened with Annabella Sciorra anyway in relation to Harvey Weinstein and the Me Too movement.
Yeah, yeah,
that even then she was kind of thinking, this isn't a winner's dress.
Yeah. So weird to know that about you, to be up for an award and to have everyone around you who loves you and who works for you saying, it's your year, Annabella, it's your year, Annabella. And for you to know in your heart that it's not your year and that you're going to feel like a tit in this, like, really, for the time, quite avant-garde piece that's so lush and so royal.
That is kind of amazing. But you see, isn't that interesting about power plays? Because...
yeah.
I had to go to this, I used to work on the radio and I got very publicly fired and it was all very embarrassing. And then I had to go to these fucking awards because I was up for one from a show I'd been fired from. And I was like, I'm not going.
I didn't know any of this about you. Wow.
Yeah, it was great crack. It was so much fun. And I was like, I'm not going. And then friends of mine were like, you have to go. You have to say a massive fuck you to your one. And I was like, oh, this is not the person who took my job. This is the person who was involved in firing me. And I was like, no, I can't. So I knew I wasn't going to win. Like, I absolutely knew there's no way I'm winning. Not a hope in hell. I was up for a couple. And then I was like, I'm not going to go. Or if I am going, I'll just run in and run out and I'm just going to wear. And a friend just went, what do you think you're doing? Don't even think about it. So I went off and I rented this fuck off ridiculous dress. Like, power play shoulders. Cut all the way down to kind of my midriff in a V.
Yeah.
Real sucky in, a long train. Like, I went all out.
Oh, you flicked the V at them. Fucking hell.
And I honestly, it made me feel, I didn't give a shit about not winning, didn't care. It was more about kind of saying to this one person, I don't give a shit what you're after doing to me. And it was about the, and I felt better in the dress as a result. It was more a power play for the industry. I hadn't associated the two until you just said that, actually.
Oh my God. But that, it's the famous Diana moment as well. It's the revenge dress. Everyone calls it the revenge
dress.
The way that we communicate to the public through our clothing is fascinating to me. And the red carpet is where that happens.
Yeah, it does. Because it, you know, with all kind of breakups and all this kind of stuff, like, you always see Jennifer Aniston every time she's on a red carpet and... after she broke up with Brad or Justin, you know, it's analysed so much. Where the fact is that Jennifer Aniston has essentially been wearing the same dress for 20 years. And fair play to her. That's what you like. It is the thing about her is that, you know, she's eternally Jennifer Aniston. She's always... That's why it's interesting about the morning show. We're seeing a different side to her. And her fashion kind of reflects... She's the never-aging one from Friends, you know, that sort of a way.
Mm.
The eternal youth, and she stayed that way. She hasn't had the kids and everything like that. And I've always thought that was kind of interesting about her fashion choices and everything like that. And then, I suppose, will we talk about the dress that launched a thousand memes?
The Angelina Jolie one?
Angelina Jolie, the leg!
The leg! What did it mean? There really was a year there where you couldn't go anywhere without seeing that leg.
Like, it was superimposed onto everything. The Pope, presidents, World Cup finals, you know, any sort of, like, I remember football games and it was like, Angelina Jolie's leg is going for the ball. You know, the Pope was doing a big thing in Peter Square. Angelina Jolie's leg was there. I think it went to space. Like, it was so weird about what happened. And then there were articles about it for weeks. What was she thinking? Angelina Jolie furious at stylist because she chose this dress that made her leg stick out. I was like, sure, she just stuck out her leg. The leg looks good.
She stuck out the leg.
She stuck out the leg. I suppose the slit was in a bit of the wrong place, but why not? It was sort of a stance of like, I'm a little teapot. But
yes.
Also, I don't care, you know, herself and Brad were there. They'd always been sort of a power couple since everything had happened. Like their arrival on the red carpet was really important because so many people were Team Ange and Team Jen. Mm-hmm. And you're sitting there going,
no one was Team Ange. Like it took like Angie Jolie saving a lot of orphans for anyone to like to see her as being redeemed in the public eye. No one was Team Ange. And it was so weird that entire, this is a bit of a, we're derailing a bit, but like, it was so weird that Jennifer Aniston became the template of the normal girl and the girl next door, like the stunning actress who was the it girl of the 90s. And then suddenly we're like, oh, Jen is like us. Jen is like me. And Angelina Jolie is the wicked temptress who wears blood around her neck and stuff.
And Brad has nothing to do with it. It's got nothing to do with Brad Pitt. Oh, yeah. You know, it's just we have to pick one of the women, which was so weird and played out in the red carpets that whole time. There was 4 years there where they were analysed side by side. Would they both show up? Would they be at the same events? Yeah. Oh, Jen hasn't done a movie because Angelina is going to be nominated for things this year. So she's not done a movie. So that she doesn't have to attend. Like, there was all this shit. It's insane. Yeah.
It's so, but again, the same shit happens in sports the whole time. Which kind of brings me to the Joan Rivers effect, which I think people have really, because she is the queen of red carpet commentary. And even now people feel very divided in how they felt about what she did in the red carpet. I'm personally a Joan Rivers fan. I loved the construction of this, like, bitchy, horrible woman. And I also sort of love the kind of irony and the fun of the fact this woman who's like been this hard scrabble little armadillo woman with the mad face and the mad hair who's been like, you know, clinging on to fame since, you know, her sort of early 20s, and she's been around forever and she's always been an outsider and female comedians have always been outsiders. The fact that she could like just sit on Fashion Police and look at Natalie Portman and be like, oh, she looks awful. Oh, I hate it. The idea that she could look at these women who are clearly these like the incredible beauties in their like gods or statues or paintings come to life. The idea that this kind of 65-year-old woman go, oh, I hate it, was very liberating on an individual basis. I think it all made us feel good.
What did she say something once? I don't know if it was about Michael Douglas or a female actor. And she was like, oh, it looks like my vagina's been turned inside out. I was like, what are you doing? You're just... She could say what everyone else was thinking. And she thought about the red carpet as a fun place where commentary is needed. And you're bringing it back to the sports metaphor. Because commentary is normally associated with sports. But this is exactly what she did when she was on the red carpet, first of all, with Melissa interviewing people. And she scared them so much that their publicists would have to tell them how to react to her. Or she got a bit too much 1 year and she lost her contract because they were like, it's too much. People don't want to talk to you. We have to calm down. Because this was a time before publicists controlled everything. Like, you know, these days when you go to a big... one thing that really kind of gets to me is these celeb things in like Vogue or Elle, where it's one actor interviewing another actor.
Yeah, yeah. And they're just like, oh, what do you like about acting? Well, pretending. Oh, me too. I like pretending also.
Like, but journalists are there for a reason. Yeah. They're the ones who do the research. Yeah. They're the ones who find the nitty gritty. They're the ones who do the proper deep dives. That's what journalists are there for. They're there to find the deep, dark secrets. They're there to bring out the person that you are. And Joan sort of did that, because all fashion is related to who you are, what you're comfortable in. That's why I think it's so difficult sometimes for people on the red carpet. You know, the way you hear stories about, I chose it 3 hours beforehand because there was 10 dresses.
Yeah.
Sometimes they don't know who they're going to go as, because it's very hard, I think, up until recently, for actors to be themselves. But it feels like there was a change in like 2015, 2016. And with the arrival of things like Instagram or whatever, where you can talk directly to people and your words mightn't be able to be misconstrued as much as they were before. And it's the sort of thing that, without a shadow of a doubt, I think Reese Witherspoon and Kerry Washington have brought about a little bit more power there. But Joan, she lampooned everything, because it's an industry that takes itself so seriously.
That's it.
And it can be very po-faced. Like, it really can. You know, when it started the Ask Her More campaign in 2015, which I agreed with, by the way, because it was really weird. They did all these things where they panned up and down women's bodies. They never did that to the men in the suits. They only asked women about, what are you wearing? What are your jewels? And then men, it was like, so with your role, like, that year was one of my favorite years of red carpet interviews, because I thought that Julianna Rancic and Ryan Seacrest's heads, their little heads, were going to explode off their bodies, because they were like, fuck, we've got to ask them shit? What? No.
Yeah.
I don't, like, they just, it was, if you ever want to go back and just see two people being incredibly uncomfortable at having to actually ask questions, it's brilliant. But now it's gone back. They're asking a little bit more, but they're also asking about the fashion as well, which is great.
The thing about Ask Her More is that it is incredibly well-intentioned, and like, so many great people got behind it and been like, yeah, these are great, like, creative women, and they have things to say and we should ask them what they are and blah, blah. But also, I do think that it has to be acknowledged that the teams of people that go behind these looks that only exist on this person's body for 5 or 6 hours, but the reading about how much goes into the planning of this thing. So I read this anecdote about Helen Mirren, who's incredibly hard to get to because she's very, very choosy and she only wears sleeves. And lots of designers will pitch her things that will, you know, in her eyes, go on a younger woman. So she doesn't really meet with people. Her stylist goes to meet people. So I read this whole thing about this designer who wanted to dress her. She flew out, the stylist, to Paris. They met in Paris. They did the sketches. They were sent back to Helen. Helen approved them. And then Helen wanted to get the dress made that she had chosen. So he makes it to her entire specifications, like a total couture garment. And then it is shipped to where she is in LA. And it is among 10 dresses that she has to choose from that day. So this is a person, this is an up-and-coming designer who has sank hundreds of hours in a very short period of time, probably between December and March, like, trying to make this couture garment for this huge celebrity who may choose it on the day. And I do think that work and that athleticism and that craft should be acknowledged in a public forum, because these are artists, these are designers, these are people who are staking everything. And it's not just about the woman wearing it, it's about the vision as well. So I do think there's a place for saying, who did your jewellery? Who is this dress? Why this dress, you know?
Yeah, there absolutely is. There's a place for both. Hiya, you're nominated. Isn't that fucking fantastic? Also, that's a pretty nice guna. Tell us about that. It's not hard to do both. Like, why it was such a big deal for these people on the red carpet to ask them more than one question. I was like, when Reese started it, I was like, it seemed fairly obvious that you should be able to ask these women a few more things. Yeah. But at that stage, it had gotten so kind of beyond ridiculous, degrading. Like, can you remember the Manny Cam?
Oh my, of course I remember the Manny Cam. If anyone remembers, the Manny Cam was a tiny little red carpet that you used to walk your little fingers up and down so you could check the hand jewellery and the manicure.
They made women walk their fingers up and down a fake red carpet.
It's so mental.
So, And to see their form, to see if they could do it properly, I thought it was the most bonkers thing I had ever seen. I was like, as if it's not hard enough to walk in fucking heels, now you're making them do something that two-year-olds do. Like, come on, this has gone beyond.
But the thing is, back to the pole facing, there's a world in which that's gas. Like, there's a world in which, like, it's really funny, and like we all agree that we're bringing a bit of levity to the situation. But because Juliana Rancic and Ryan Seacrest, they're so serious and they really have no personalities. They're like, yeah, and do you wanna put your on the mani cam now, please?
They're so serious about it. That's the thing. If it was done with a wink and a nod, great fun. And then the whole thing came crashing to the ground when Elizabeth Moss was there, and she was up for this was back in when she was doing Mad Men. And she was there, and Juliana was like, do you want to do the mani cam? She was like, yeah, there was something that I really wanted to do the last time I was here, actually, but I didn't do it. And she was like, do it. Oh my God, this is E! We're broadcasting to 160 countries around the world. People would love to see. And she goes, okay, she puts it down and she gives it the finger. And I thought,
so rock and roll,
Juliana
is so good.
Was going to have a stress poo on the carpet. Her face. I was like, how did you not think that someone was going to tell your mani cam to fuck off at some stage? Come on. It was the most.
I love how Juliana Rancic has been doing this job forever and she still has never been chill a day in her life. It's like, she always seems so nervous.
She does seem nervous, and it's like
she's like a spooked
not
filly.
Nervous, just this excitement, and obviously the woman works incredibly hard to get to where she is. She's got a lot going on in her life, but the sense of fun. Where is the sense of fun?
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah.
You know, how did you not know
that's it.
that was going to happen? But yeah, you're right. She always does seem stressed. I always think
she
someone,
does.
Someone just give her a glass of Sauvignon Blanc there. Just, let's take it down a notch. It'd be fine. It's very warm. It's very warm, yeah. Juliana. Great. Like, I'm still watching. I'm multi-watching every time they're on. I've got E on one channel. I've got ABC in America and another. I'm like, let's go. I'm in.
I feel like we need to go to some horror moments. We've talked about there being winners and losers. What are the loser moments for you?
There's one thing that we... See, they're not kind of losers. They kind of changed the way things go. But there's one thing that you and I both talked about the night that I screamed red carpet at you. And it's a dress that stuck out in both of our minds. And it was your suggestion. And I was like, yeah, I just don't get it.
I don't get it. And it's the Julia Roberts Valentino black dress with the white piping. I don't get it. It makes the best dressed list all the time, of like all time greatest lists all the time. I don't it's so boring.
But it was that time where America's Princess, which is what Julia Roberts was, when she had finally gotten her Oscar. Like somehow they were
for Erin Brockovich, I think.
For Erin Brockovich. And that was a movie in which she had her bras on show. She was wearing really short skirts. It was about her being viewed, Erin Brockovich, the person herself, her story, as being, you know, a woman who's a temptress. She was a single mother.
You're so right. The marketing around that movie and the critical response to that movie, you would swear it was about like Kim Cattrall's character in Sex and the City. I swear it was like a Samantha movie. It was like, oh, woman wears a bra and goes to court. Like it was marketed like a Carry On movie. It was so weird.
Julia's sexiest role. It wasn't a sexy role. She was an overworked single mother who was trying to discover why people were getting cancer in a certain area because chemicals were absolutely destroying their water. So this is based on the true story, but this is what it was. This is what the story was. She finally gets her Oscar, which people have been wanting for years because, and I will always be there, Julia Roberts is fucking fantastic. I just, Pretty Woman.
Adore.
Until the end of time. Don't talk to me about Runaway Bride. I will love it as well.
I love Runaway Bride.
I love Runaway Bride. When people give out about her accent in Michael Collins, I'm like, I don't care. Julia Roberts can do whatever the fuck she wants. And then this gown It's a classic American gown that they were harking back to sort of the days of Audrey Hepburn, who wasn't American but was claimed as American, to the days of Grace Kelly.
Yeah.
This was what the gown was. She was the all-American girl finally getting what people had been rooting for. And they love this dress because I think it's kind of a symbol of that classic American style. Whereas we look at it as going, it's just boring.
And it's so true. It's once again, it's talking about that thing of like how the red carpet dress used to promote a movie acts as a kind of a counterweight to the character depicted in what we're all thinking about. Because these actresses are going out night after night promoting this film, wanting you to think about them in that movie, but also wanting to have this very deliberate antithesis to it, which is wearing this black Valentino classic. I'd never thought of it that way, but you're so right.
Because there was so much going on. I can't remember if she was with Danny Moder at this stage. Oh, I think she was. And there had been the whole controversy about that as well, because he had been married before and what's the timelines with the Mexican and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it was about making sure that her image was protected as also being, don't worry, still Julia Roberts, everything's fine. Because Julia has had a very interesting off-camera life. You know, the night before she was meant to marry Kiefer Sutherland in what, 1990, herself and Jason Patrick, their co-star in Flatliners, they ran away to Ireland together the night before the wedding.
Another celebrity in Ireland story.
Lads, I'm not doing this on purpose. I'm not.
People just like coming to our country. They find it chill and fun.
Because Runaway Bride, it was funny, wasn't it? She'd kind of run away from Benjamin Bratt around that time as well. Because they were meant to get married and she ran away.
And Lyle Lovett.
Well, they did get married, but she ran away. That was very strange. That was...
She can't be satisfied.
I was obsessed with that. But this was about... her, she's still the all-American girl, and this is a classic gown, and you can accept this. Because I think Julia probably in real life is a bit of an alternative person. Like, she almost broke the world when she went on the red carpet for the Notting Hill premiere in London and she hadn't shaved under her arms.
Yes. Oh, I love that picture.
Her waving.
I love it so much.
And everyone, for years, it still comes up in articles, you know, the statement that Julia Roberts made by not shaving her armpits. And she was like, it actually wasn't a statement. I just don't shave my armpits and I'm just a person and I got into a dress. I didn't know that the sleeves were that short.
It's so interesting what Julia Roberts does, because she does telegraph a sort of a sense of blandness and of like blankness sometimes.
Yes.
And she's just like, that my eyes and mouth do the thing and you're mesmerized when I'm on screen. And then there's a smoke screen of just like, yeah, I'm a softly spoken woman.
Yeah.
But you know, there's something subversive and like fucking a bit gnarly under the surface, but we'll never get to it. And that's what makes her still like the star. She could not do a movie for 20 years. And in my head, she's still the biggest star in the world.
100%. And she is one that you look to who has protected their life so incredibly well. Because she can be her real self and then she can still be the Julia Roberts that we know and love. And you're dead right. One of the biggest film stars in the world and we barely ever bloody see her.
Yes, so true. Another moment of like a star trying to telegraph something that in my opinion, they tried too hard and it went the other way is Lady Gaga's A Star Is Born Oscar season. Award season.
There can be 100 people in a room and 99 people won't believe in you, but you just need that one person. Shut up, Gaga. Can't do it anymore.
Shut up, Gaga. Yeah. And like, so we know her for years as being this like avant-garde pop star who wears meat and like, you know, comes down the runway in an egg and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, for her whole Star is Born award season, not only is she giving these dull interviews, but she's also coming down the runway in these like, admittedly very beautiful, but extremely overblown old Hollywood dresses. Like she's got like puffs on the sleeves like Cinderella, and like she's got these huge skirts, and like it's almost like the 50s on steroids. Like it's like more 50s than the 50s was.
The wave. She had the wave every time.
The wave. All of that. And I think, and if we think about how everyone talks about A Star is Born as being I personally fucking hated that movie. I thought it sucked.
Oh my God.
But people really wanted it to win things, and it really didn't. I think it won Best Original Song, but it lost everything else. And I think it's because if we think about who votes for the Oscars and who votes for these awards, it's people in the industry, and they saw her like basically trying to be more Hollywood than Hollywood as this pop star. And I think they were like, fuck you. I think it annoyed them. I think it was annoying to look at. It was annoying to be around.
I couldn't agree more. I think it 100% annoying to be around. Every time that she was on a show, I was like, I don't want to watch it because she's given the same interview 17 times. Yeah. I cannot. Like, there was remixes on the internet about the 100 people in a room, 99 and one. I was like, I can't listen to this anymore. You're dead right. It's all about, I remember it was Michael Fassbender a few years ago who gave an insight into it as to why he hadn't gone to things or done things for 12 Years a Slave, for Shame, like all his Steve McQueen stuff. And he was like, no, it's like being a politician. You have to campaign for these things, and I just don't care. It's like, I don't want to spend 6 months going to dinners and shaking hands. Listen, I was in a film. I really enjoyed the film. I think it's an important film, but I'm not going around sniffing people's arses for 6 months. I'd like to live my life. And I always knew it was political, but then I realized how political these things actually are, because you have to, like, really suck up to people. And Gaga, you're dead right. I think it was too much. They were all like,
she overplayed her hand.
And it was boring. And friends of mine died for it. They were like, oh my God, it's so amazing. And not to be an arsehole, but I was like, have you watched the Barbra Streisand one?
I'm like, have you watched the Judy Garland one?
The Judy Garland one. Like, they're, I just really fancy Kris Kristofferson. But even with all of that, they, like, Bradley Cooper was so po-faced, and she was so po-faced about it.
Yeah. The way this like stupid like popcorn movie that they were like really acting like they were doing Philadelphia or something, like it was mad.
They were changing the world. Oh my God, Bradley Cooper pissed himself on a fake award stage. This is acting. It's like, no, lads.
Having said that, I think that was the only part of the movie I enjoyed.
When he pissed himself.
That and when she stands up in the bath and her whole bush is out. I also
That was very good. I enjoy. I'm like, well done. Full bush. Well done. Fair play to you. I do like Shallow.
That's where you and I part.
I know. I do like the song. I do. But that's about all that I like from that. And it is. It's, oh yeah. They're just, oh God. I really want to figuratively punch them in the face. You've brought that back into my head now.
I know, it was so annoying. And like, I think they would have won a few more if they had been less annoying.
If they'd been a bit,
I really do.
Can you be a bit of, be a bit of crack, lads? No?
Okay. Be a bit of crack.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And the outfits were telegraphing that annoyingness.
Oh yeah. Yeah, because she was
because
playing.
I think as well, if you're a first time nominee and you're a pop star and you're literally taking up the red carpet with so much material and like, you kind of want to be like, Stephanie Germanotta, be a bit gracious now. Like, this is Kate Winslet's fourth time here or whatever, 11th time here, you know, and she's having to hide, like, you know, walk fucking 3 meters behind you because you're a train. Have some respect for the women who've been here for 20 years.
Yeah, you pup.
You pup.
Don't you dare to our Kate. Sorry now, Mayor of Easttown. My God, how amazing.
We should wrap up, but I do think we have a few more like amazing. I think Kate is worth putting a pin in, because when I tweeted about what's your most memorable sort of red carpet moments, what taught you about what you wanted beauty to be, so many people said Kate.
Are we talking about Kate Winslet in like the Red Valentino, or are we talking about Kate Winslet back in the days of Titanic, when she was wearing all of those dresses that we all wore to like our Debses? Where she had like the
like Celtic dresses
and the corset and then the skirt.
Yeah. Yeah. She's had such a style evolution, I think.
Oh my God. That woman is amazing. And very quick mention before we go, because this has all been about women. Men have definitely come to the fore in the past few years.
Yes. And they're starting to emerge now, I think.
They're starting to be more fun. Now, we know that Jared Leto has been flying the Jesus flag for a very long time. Fair play to him. Like, he is the new embodiment of Jesus. We get it. Of the Jesus we think of from a Eurocentric way. But then Billy Porter comes along in 2019 and he wears that tuxedo dress. And you're like, that man is making a statement. He wants to start a conversation, but he's also having fun. And this year, we see Leslie Odom Jr., Josh O'Connor, Riz Ahmed, Dan Levy. I was waiting every single time going, what are they going to wear? Because they were having fun. They were just going,
so great.
We can be involved in this as well. Daniel Kaluuya wore his pajamas to the SAGs, I think it was. Now, it wasn't a Penny's Hunt pajamas or Primark. It was some fancy pajamas, but it was something you'd think Dickens would wear. And also, King of Comfort and a person I have fallen in love with this year, Jason Sudeikis, wearing his hoodies. Men's fashion moment. It happened in the pandemic.
Do you know what I also love about the men fashion moment that's been happening the last couple of years is we've now gotten to a place so quickly, and which is really fun, where it's now not enough that a man is wearing something sort of flamboyant or femmy or whatever. We've gotten to the point where Harry Styles and Timothée Chalamet have worn so much like women's clothing that people are like, look, I don't think that was good on him. I think that brocade is dated. I don't think that thing. It's like they've done so much now that we're starting to criticize them in the same way that we do with female
with
fashion.
Women.
We've already moved past the like, oh, good for him wearing a skirt, making a statement.
And isn't
you know?
It fantastic? You are so right. We're already there going, didn't suit him.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm telling you, that tutu was not slimming.
It didn't suit him. Like, you know, when we sit down and we watch Outlander, it's not just for the sex scenes. It's to see how good Jamie's knees are in the skirts, in the kilts. You know, men's fashion has always been there. We just need, I've just really enjoyed seeing it this year, them really getting involved in it in the pandemic. And it's been wonderful. It's a sport, guys. It's a sport.
It's a sport. Oh, I have loved this podcast. This is the first record of the new season for me. And this has like really got me off with a bang. Like, Marin, do you have anything else you want to say before we part ways?
I would like to say that it is an incredible position to be in, to be sitting on my shitty wine-stained couch in my rented house, watching these celebrities who have spent hours and days making themselves look fantastic for me to be drinking €8 bottles of wine and criticizing them at 4 o'clock in the morning, and for them to do that for me, thank you. Just thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Jesus, we never even talked about Liz Hurley and the Versace dress. Do you know what? We don't have time.
Oh my God, Liz Hurley. Oh, we haven't talked about Liz Hurley. We haven't talked about Bjork and the Swan. We haven't talked about J-Lo in the green
Versace dress that Jerry Halliwell wore first.
Wow, really?
Halliwell wore the green Versace dress a few months previously at, it was either the MTV Awards or the month before J-Lo. Jerry Halliwell wore that Versace dress first.
And then J-Lo gets credited for inventing Google Images.
Because of the dress, yeah.
Because of the dress.
Like, if you were Jerry Halliwell, you'd be pissed.
Pissed. I feel like she has a lot of resentments. She seems like someone who lives with resentment. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we'll just, yeah.
Also, Bjork and the Swan, like, every, you know, I just... I'm just saying Bjork and the Swan because I know as soon as this goes up, people will tweet me and say, you didn't talk about Bjork and the Swan?
Bjork and the Swan, they'll talk about the Bob Mackie dresses that Cher wore throughout the years, which were fantastic. You look back at them now and you're like, my God, that woman was having fun. And she did it as a big up you because the Oscars didn't take her seriously as an actress in 1986. And she was like, I should be up for an award in Mask because she got it at Cannes and they didn't even nominate her. And she was like, well, fuck you, I'm wearing this. I don't care. And the Oscars had also said that year that women should wear dresses because too many women had been showing up in trouser suits in the previous year. So she wore that trouser suit.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
The mohawk. Oh, so fabulous.
I mean, so good. Everyone's going to be shouting about the things that we haven't mentioned, but we could be here for a five-parter. That's how important red carpets are.
They're so important. Oh, oh, Marin, I've loved this so much. This has been the best. Please promise you'll come back for another episode sometime soon. You are a dream.
Can I pitch in the exact same way? Just shout words at you in caps.
Just shout words. Yes, you can. You have won that privilege.
It has been a pleasure being on this podcast as a fan of it for a very long time, Caroline. Thank you so much.
This has been Sentimental Garbage, and I've been Caroline O'Donoghue. You can follow me on Twitter at Zaroline, that's Czaroline, or email me about the podcast at ZaroLineO'Donoghue@gmail.com. This has been a Justice for Dumb Women podcast. Thanks to Harry Harris for the jingle, Gavin Day for the logo, and Acast for the recording space.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.